And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Ellie Robinson. Ellie is the co-author of a new book, a fully revised and updated book, Surviving Adolescence 2.0. Ellie is a researcher, writer and mother who began her career as a youth worker. Since then, she has worked to promote the use of evidence in practice with children, young people and families. She has a graduate diploma in adolescent health and a Master of Public Health from the University of Melbourne. Ellie, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So, Ellie, I thought maybe if we could just start with the title of your book, Surviving Adolescence. My question, I suppose, is who is the book actually intended for?
The book's intended for parents, both prior to adolescence and whilst in the middle of it, so that the new set of skills that's needed when children reach that age group, the old skills that were effective when children were younger, need some tweaking once you get to those years due to the different changes going on in development and so forth. So we encourage parents pre-teen years and in the teenage years to read the book.
Yeah, so it's really addressed to the parents, and the idea is that you survive with by going to the manual to get all sorts of tips. But do you think parents can hope to actually enjoy their time with their adolescent children, not just perhaps survive?
Absolutely. I think the problem for us is that the teenage years get a really bad rap in society generally. I know when my child was entering those years that the conversations that went on around me were always so negative about the teenage years. So we've got a little bit of work to do in changing society perspective. This is an amazing period of development, and the point of the book and any advice around this age is to have the skills and knowledge and strategies that help you to understand why teenagers behave in a certain way, take risks and push the boundaries that you set for them, give parents the skills and knowledge to be able to deal with those things so that you do enjoy it and listen to what your teenager says and have those positive moments. We definitely encourage that.
Yes, I think at one point you point out that adolescents can actually be quite funny when you engage in conversations with them.
Yeah, that's right. Teenagers have an amazing fresh view on the world, and if you give them the opportunity, it's really interesting to listen to what they've got to say and the way that they look at different things. Of course, they're immersed in the 24/7 technology era, so their sources of information and the way that they think about things is really refreshing. So, yeah, I definitely encourage some good positive conversation.
And on the other side of that, adolescent boys in particular, if they go down the wrong path, they can really cause some havoc. And I'm intrigued that your co-author, Michael Carr Gregg, talks about his own experiences when he was 17. So when boys do go down that wrong path, are there suggestions in there about how to pick up the pieces, as obviously Michael Carr Gregg did?
Yeah, that's right. So it's both some preventive ideas in there about how do you try to set up an environment and communication and boundary setting and limits so that those behaviours don't occur in the first instance. So one of the things we say is particularly choose your battles. So Michael's favourite line is that no one ever died of an untidy bedroom. Mm. So let those sorts of things go, shut the door, and really concentrate your efforts on parenting in a way that helps your child, whilst their brain is still developing, to make good decisions, particularly around safety and also around respect for others. So that's the preventive part. If things do go wrong, it's important to remember that teenage years are a really big time of testing and trying things out. Those parts of the brain that are around understanding consequences of behaviour, impulsivity and decision making, they're not fully developed yet, which is why young people often behave in the way that they do. So really important for parents to remember not to panic, not to think of one isolated incident as being something that's going to send a young person off on a different path, but to bring it back to that understanding of brain development and to respond in a way that helps young people to understand why they might not have been great decisions, open up those lines of communication and think about other ways to respond.
I mean, I think your book is designed to address this problem, but it seems to me that a lot of parents lack the confidence to actually stand up to their children. I think you talk at some stages about parents wanting to be best friends with the children and perhaps not setting those boundaries that they need to.
Yeah, that's right. So research actually says that parents start to lose confidence in the teenage years. And again, it goes back to that, having a different understanding about this age group compared to the tips and tricks that worked when young people were younger than that. So, yeah, we say open up the lines of communication, think about the way that development happens and responding to events and particularly to understand there's a lot to do at this age group in terms of mental health. We know that mental health for young people, again, it's not great at this time of life. So for parents to understand what the signs and symptoms are of anxiety, depression, those sorts of things, as not being necessarily normal storm and stress that's often associated with these years, but knowing when to worry about things and when that sort of behaviour is quite normal adolescent development.
There are different parenting styles. You divide them up into, permissive, authoritative and authoritarian. I wonder if you could just take us through those different styles, because like oftentimes a father and a mother will have a different parenting style, and you can draw something from each of those different characteristics.
Yeah, and it is when different styles come together that often conflict might occur between parents around how to deal with issues with raising a teenager. So as you say, the three main ones are permissive, authoritarian. So permissive is the laissez-faire attitude to parenting where there's no boundaries or limits in place. The young person can do what they please. It's low on demand and it's low on responsiveness. Authoritarian, on the other hand, is high on demand and high on responsiveness. So it means that there's a lot of checks and balances in place. There's not a lot of freedom for the young person. Often it's corporal punishment that might come into play in these years. So, and both of those types of parenting styles, there's good evidence to say that they have less good outcomes for both children and young people than authoritarian, which is that balance between the two. It's a classic fair but firm, where there's limits and boundaries, but there's also an understanding that your child needs to learn and grow. You need to invest some trust and respect in them and give them that freedom to take some safe risks and understand what works for them as they move into the adult years and being there for them. So rather than being a punitive response when things go wrong, it's an inquiry response. It's thinking about why the behaviours happen and then responding in a different way and suggesting some other alternative ways that a teenager can respond to things that encourages more positive outcomes.
And we're speaking today with Ellie Robinson, who is the co-author with Michael Carr-Gregg of a new book called Surviving Adolescence 2.0, The Must-Have Manual for All Parents. Ellie, we spoke a few minutes ago about the problems with mental health at the moment with our adolescents, and the statistics are pretty frightening. I mean, you only need to look at the suicide levels. Do you see this as a modern crisis, or is it something that's been around for a long time? Perhaps are we changing our parenting styles or something?
It's a really interesting question, Bill. The statistics would say that in the last few years, there's been two major surveys of young people's mental health. One was in the late 90s and one was in 2014. Both of those said that there were mental health problems that existed in that age group. We know that early onset of problems usually occur around the adolescent years. So a lot of adult mental illnesses have their onset within those years. So it is a really important time to be aware of mental health issues. Whether it's changed or not, we don't really know from some years ago because we didn't have access to the same prevalence figures as we do now. But we do also know that the pressures that are on young people these days related to more modern things like technology, pressure in the VCE years, just pressures in society as a whole about who you are and what you want to do. There are a lot of things that are common to contemporary society that there is some evidence to say that that can affect young people's behaviour and well-being much more than things might have been different in other years, but they're very contemporary problems that we know contribute to the way young people feel.
All the more reason to refer to the Must-Have Manual for All Parents, Surviving Adolescence 2.0. 2.0, which is fully revised and updated. Ellie, we've reached the stage of the show where I ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you've picked and why you picked it?
Sure. I picked Jack Johnson's song Traffic in the Sky. It was a song that we used to play a lot when my daughter was young, and she'd sit in the back of the car and sing along to it. So I thought it might be a good option for today's show.
There's traffic in the sky and it doesn't seem to be getting much better. There's kids playing games on the pavement, drawing waves on the pavement, mm-hmm. Shadows of the planes on the pavement, mm-hmm. It's enough to make me cry, but that don't seem like it will make you feel better. Well, maybe it's a dream, and if I scream it will burst at the seams. Whole place would fall into pieces and then they'd say, well, how could we have known? I'll tell them it's not so hard to tell. No, no, no. You keep adding stones, soon the water will be lost in the well. Mm. Puzzle pieces in the ground, no one ever seems to be digging. Instead, they're looking up towards the heavens with their eyes on the heavens. Mm-hmm. The shadows on the way to the heavens, mm-hmm. It's enough to make me cry. That don't seem like it will make you feel better. The answers could be found, we could learn from digging down. But no one ever seems to be digging. Instead they'll say, well, how could we have known? I'll tell them it's not so hard to tell. No, no. You keep adding stones, soon the water will be lost in the well. Mm. And words of wisdom all around, but no one ever seems to listen. They're talking about the plans on the paper, building up from the pavement. Mm-hmm. The shadows from the scrapers on the pavement.
We're dads on the air.
And that was Traffic in the Sky by Jack Johnson, specially chosen for us today by our guest Ellie Robinson, who is the co-author of a new book called Surviving Adolescence 2.0. Ellie, we were just talking about the mental disorders and some of the problems that adolescents go through. I wonder if the issue that's raised with you most often is the impact of social media on our adolescents.
Yeah, certainly. It's very different to what we used to know as teenagers. So it's not like teaching your children skills that we would have known about when we were young. It's not like riding a bike that we're familiar with and being able to then pass on those skills to our children. This is a whole new world, and it's getting it's that 24/7 access to social media. So one of the things we encourage parents to do is to make sure that you understand your child really well, understand when they're ready to introduce social media and to use it, not under pressure from other parents or the stories that your child will come home with saying, you know, every Tom, Dick and Harry in the schoolyard gets to go on Instagram, why can't I? Mm. What we want parents to understand is your child needs to have those social skills and communication skills that they know that if something goes wrong online, they can come to you and talk to you about that. If they experience bullying, that they know there's places like the eSafety Commissioner where they can report what goes online, how they report things that they find negative experiences on social media to the actual social media company themselves. So definitely a different world. Going back to the adolescent brain development, all that impulsivity and risk-taking and decision-making, the things where the parts of the brain aren't fully developed till the mid-20s, we're kind of giving young people these tools without really having that cognitive development ready to use them. So up to parents to know what's available out there, how they work, and talk to their children about using them before they introduce them.
I think it's interesting that you actually see some good points in social media. I mean, all we ever hear about is the bullying and sexting and all the rest of it, but you point to the fact that it can increase communication, it can increase manual dexterity, and there are a few good things, so we shouldn't be looking to ban it.
Yeah, and they're the parts that you don't hear so much about. We're used to stories in the media that tell you all the bad parts about social media. It has matured as a form in a lot of ways, so now there's lots of opportunities for young people to be creative through social media, taking pictures, engaging in political movements or social movements that are positive in terms of their development, in terms of others' development. One of the things we know from video game research is that, again, that's not all bad. We hear a lot of the bad stories about video game playing, but a story that a friend of mine told me was that when her son was very nervous about starting high school, the way that he engaged with some of the kids that he'd met in orientation was to exchange contact online and play some games with each other to get to know each other before they turned up at the school gate on the first day. And that really helped him to get to know people and to build those social connections that made him a little bit less anxious about starting school. So they're the stories we don't hear so much about. It is a very powerful tool, and we have to be very careful around the way that, particularly when it's introduced in a young person's life, what we tell them about the ways to use it. But it's definitely not all negative.
You talk about one form of a rite of passage. You talk about the schoolies, that it might be sort of a default thing when you leave school. You go off for a couple of weeks maybe. But most of our adolescents are still living at home and continue until quite a relatively older age. They're not really having that rite of passage that perhaps might help to get over that being an adolescent and start turning into an adult.
Yeah, so what we know from the research, as you've pointed out, is that young people are staying at home for longer, they're marrying later, they're moving out later, they're having children later. So those markers that we used to know around the start, or what we felt was the start of adulthood, like getting your first job and moving out of home, they're happening a lot later than they did. So a lot of parents are finding now, I think the statistics used to be 1 in 5 young people moved out in the early adult years in the 1970s. That's become 1 in 3. So it's a much smaller number who are leaving home earlier. What that then means is that you're negotiating within the house with someone who's already an adult, and the whole relationship between parent and child changes in that way. So it's yet another transition to make around that parenting. At the other end of things is that there's lots of evidence to say that puberty is happening earlier. So overall, that stage of adolescence is now really extended out from starting at around about 10 or 11 through to the brain development, and the leaving home is really more around the mid-20s now. So a big period of time where parents are really needing to still be in that active parenting role.
And the child is still stuck between not quite a child and not quite an adult, which is...
Right. I mean, in our society, as you said, we don't really do that end of adolescence and entry to adulthood with any particularly really key markers around that. So as you identified, schoolies is often that end point where school has finished and it's stepping into the next period of life. But of course, schoolies is associated with a lot of risk-taking behaviours around drug-taking, alcohol, for the young people who are risk-takers. There's some big risks there. So there's a lot of societies that do that in a more formal and a more recognised way, where that doesn't sort of really happen in our culture and in our community in the same way.
And boys are perhaps particularly trying to find themselves. I'm sure it applies to both, but we've come to expect that girls will be conscious of their body image, but I think you're finding now that boys are starting to be conscious of body images.
Yeah, that's right. It's a fairly new phenomenon again, and going back to our conversation about social media, what social media does do is present these ideals of body and ideals of life that young people see online, and again, they don't really have the skills yet to really look at those and realise that it's not a real life scenario. So for young men, it's often the buff bodies and the bodybuilding images that are out there. I think in one of the other books, in Prince Buffhead Syndrome, we talk about the bodybuilder.com site, where there's something like 11.5 million users on there at any one time. So that's a massive amount of people engaging in that kind of body image world. And often we talk about the fact that if that's the only space where you spend your time online, then you start to think that that's a normal way to live rather than having those markers outside of that to say, actually, this is just a small proportion of society and really there's lots of different shapes and sizes out there that make up the world.
And perhaps the best way to get that message across might be, as you suggest, that fathers should be around a bit more because boys might tend to model their fathers and have that important influence at that stage of their development.
Both for young men and young women, the literature shows that fathers are really important, and more than just providing materially. We know from literature that fathers give a different experience to children and teenagers than the mothers do. Both have their roles. So fathers tend to engage in a lot more roughhouse play. They tend to encourage their children to take safe risks, like climbing trees and so forth. That's tends to be what the evidence says. That tends to be fathers that do that a little bit more than mothers. So fathers play an incredibly strong role in outcomes for children, and one of the things we encourage is for parents to spend quality time rather than thinking too much about the quantity of time. When you are with your children, spend that in a quality way. Everyone putting down their phones, everyone engaging and looking eye to eye, everyone having those conversations around the dinner table where there's no interruptions from technology, there's a focus on everyone's day. Those sorts of things are really important for good outcomes.
At the moment, the evidence in education is that boys are dropping way behind. Do you think the modelling with the fathers might do something at least to address that, the way the boys are failing in this area?
I think all these things feed into results. So there's definitely differences in terms of outcomes for young men and young women in schools. It's an interesting thing to look into what the literature says because it's not necessarily as clear-cut around what the issues are in that sense. One of the things we tackle in the book is the age-old chestnut around whether single-sex schools or co-ed schools are better, and really the evidence is not terribly clear on that. It depends what your academic outcome is that you're measuring, but again, it's about knowing your child and knowing what suits them best. Young men tend to not have the same outcomes at school. Role models in terms of parents and other significant adults around both young men and young women are really important. Important not to get too stuck down in the kind of stereotypes around gender in this way as well. So opening up avenues for young women to study maths and science and for young men to study some of the more humanities subjects that might better suit the temperament and the natural inclinations that your child has.
And one of the big problems in advancing is and it's addressed in the book, is bullying. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, but you've got some excellent tips. And a couple I was intrigued with, you said that it's best not to contact the other parent. And also, contrary to all the movies, you don't tell, say, your son to go out and punch him in the eye.
The danger with that is you put yourself in a situation where there might be a comeback around who's actually being the bully. So if your child has been a victim of bullying behaviour, best idea is to listen very carefully around what the story is, believe your child's take on the story, and take it to the school. Schools have a duty of care for children who are being bullied and to make sure that they're safe and well within the school environment. So best to leave it to having a discussion with school staff around what went on, having the discussion with your child around what happened, and being open to the idea. You know, we hear a lot about victims and not so much about bullies. So one of the things we also say in the book is if you do find that your child or there's been a claim from the school that your child has been engaged in bullying behaviour, again, you need to hear what the story is. You need to understand the link between victim behaviour and bullying behaviour. So many bullies are victims as well, and that doesn't excuse that behaviour, but getting a more coherent understanding about why the behaviour's happened and responding in a calm way, gathering the facts, and then calling on the school to find the solutions to that is really important.
Look, there's a lot of good advice about bullying. There's a lot of good advice generally in this new book, Surviving Adolescence 2.0. We're speaking today with Ellie Robinson, one of the co-authors. Ellie, again, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask for you to pick a song. Could you tell us which one?
I picked Vance Joy's song, Saturday Sun, mainly just because it's a good, happy song, especially if for the end of the day, it's a good song to listen to lift your spirits.
Oh, Saturday Sun, I met someone out on the West Coast. I gotta get back, I can't let this go. Saturday Sun, I met your sunlight's ever long. So tired of sleeping alone, so tired of eating alone. I need to ask her, what's going on? Are we going strong? She felt like resting her head, my shoulder was the perfect height. We fit so right, so what's going on? Cause I've been undone. The long drive, the coastline, looking out at first light. Am I still on her mind? I've been undone. I met someone out on the west coast. I gotta get back, I can't let this go. Saturday sun, I met someone, don't care what it costs. No ray of sunlight ever lost, ever lost. Papa. She put the breeze in my head. No kiss was softer, softer than this. I'm reading her lips. Oh, each line I read, she left her books in my bed and her song in my head. I've been undone. Oh, Saturday sun, I met someone out on the west coast. I gotta get back, I can't let this.
That was Saturday Sun by Vance Joy, especially chosen for us today by our guest Ellie Robinson, the co-author of Surviving Adolescence 2.0. So it just remains for me now to thank you, Ellie. Thank you very much for being on Dads on the Air.
Thanks very much for having me, Bill.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.